That was WOOC Labor host and roaming correspondent Willie Terry reporting on the Poor People's Campaign.
Next up, a Hudson Mohawk magazine brings you the second part of a conversation with Times Union editor Rex Smith.
I'm Aaron Pednati, and today I'm interviewing Rex Smith, the editor and vice president of Albany's Times Union newspaper, about the ways that the crisis of print media in the early 21st century has affected the newspaper industry in the capital region. Rex, thanks for this interview. It's good to have you as a guest on the Hudson Mohawk Evening Magazine.
Thanks, Aaron. Great to be here.
So when people talk about the crisis of newspapers and the crisis of journalism, they're usually referring to a few related topics. One of the topics is the ways in which the advent of digital news sources has impacted newspapers that have traditionally relied on print sales and subscription fees for sizable portions of their budget. Another is the way that this economic challenge has affected the amount of money available to pay journalists and finance the work of long-term investigative news teams. And a third is the emergence of extremely polarized political climates around the country in which agreement about standards of objectivity and general levels of trust in the media are at historic lows. So before we get to the more locally focused questions, I'm wondering if you can give us your more general take on the impact that these changes have had on newspapers and on American society's relationship to print journalism overall.
Well, it's been an epical change. About 15 years ago, in fact, I remember being in a meeting of media leaders, a few of whom at least were journalists, and our speaker was the guy who'd been the head of Imagineering for Disney. Isn't that a great title? The head of Imagineering. And he said, you know, I know some of you in the room, some of you journalists are saying that the rise of digital is akin to the invention of movable type. He said, you know, you're wrong. That changed the world, yes. He said, but the internet is not Gutenberg. The internet is the invention of the wheel. That's how much digital is going to change the world, he said. And it was eye-opening to me to think in that context. It may have been somewhat hyperbole, but it has had a tremendous effect on us because digital makes the barriers to entry, in economic terms, much lower. It used to be that to have the access to people as a storyteller in the news media, you needed to be able to afford to build a press, and so you had to be rich. Or you needed to be a journalist hired by somebody rich, in my case, for example, the Hearst Corporation. But nowadays, anybody who can build a website, which is inexpensive to do, can pose as credible a news source as we are. So we have lost the market that was afforded by the old technology. The great vision of the democratizing value of the web is something to behold, and we should celebrate that. But the result is that the credibility that had been established over years and the practice has been challenged. Newspapers used to derive 3/4 of their revenue from advertising on the print pages and 1/4 from the sales of the newspaper on the newsstand. Now we have existed for now 20 years in an environment where people are accustomed to getting all the information free on the web. We're beginning to charge people now for most of the value-laden journalism that we produce. Folks can still get photo galleries and lighthearted stuff and breaking news on TimesUnion.com for free. But if you want access to our real journalism, even digitally, you'll have to pay for it. But the result of the change in American buying habits also has had a significant impact on us. Brick and mortar stores are going away, malls are disappearing, and the result is that all of that advertising that used to be in the Times Union in order to reach people is now targeted digitally, and people are buying online instead of going to the stores. All of this has had the impact of reducing the capacity of our newsrooms to have the revenue stream we need to do the news reporting that we value. This newsroom that I'm in has about half the number of journalists as it had when I came here as the managing editor, the number two job in the newsroom in 1995. If you've cut your news team in half, you will produce less valuable content than you used to. We've tried to focus on what's valuable, but it has had a tremendous deleterious effect by and large, even though on the web you have greater storytelling capacity than we ever had in print.
So can you comment on the effect that this has had on the Times Union's ability to engage in long-term news stories, long-form investigations?
Yes. What we've tried to do is focus on the stuff that really matters. For example, here's a sensational example, NXIVM, the, some would say, cult that has been based in Albany. Now, Keith Raniere, the RPI graduate who is the leader of this group, is in a federal prison. We did a huge year-long study of NXIVM that we published in 2012, and to commit your resources to something that big is significant, and it takes a commitment to commit our resources to state government investigative reporting. We have done that. I'm very proud of the fact that a book just published by Fordham University Press by a communications professor named Beth Noble, called, the book is called The Watchdog Still Barks, How Accountability Reporting Evolved for the Digital Age. And she has reached the conclusion by studying 9 different newspapers across the country, 25 years of content, she has reached the conclusion that it confirms the Times Union's abiding interest in deep watchdog reporting. And what she has said is that a lesson for other newspapers from the Times Union, quote, resources saved by making news gathering more efficient can be redeployed toward the creation of important original reporting. And that is that by focusing your reporting resources more specifically on the kind of watchdog reporting that you consider important, you can still maintain that. But it does mean you're giving up some other stuff. In our case, we know that we're missing some breaking news. We know that we're missing some of the traditional government stories that we used to have. But you have to maintain your commitment to the certain kind of enterprise reporting that only newspapers have provided. Otherwise, you'll just be as superficial as television news reporting, and there will be no value to your readers to come to the Times Union that they might see as being a better alternative to any of the local TV stations.
So I think one of the reasons that you've been praised in this book is the fact that you've made a decision that to some extent is counter to the decision that a lot of other papers have made when they're dealing with that trade-off of breaking news or long-form investigative journalism. You're going for the latter more than the former. And if you compare that to something, for instance, like the Saratogian in Saratoga Springs, which has done exactly the opposite, that's had a real effect on the quality of the news that's being produced there. Just general comment on that?
Yes, and we're very lucky in that regard because of ownership. The Saratogian and The Record and the Kingston Daily Freeman, we now publish all those three newspapers, by the way. They're owned by this hedge fund company, Alden Capital, which is a terrible owner. The difficulty for a lot of American newspapers is that in consolidating all of these then high revenue assets in the 70s and 80s, these companies that bought up newspapers amassed huge debt loads. And to service that debt, they had to diminish their expenses. How could they do that? They could do it by cutting their newsrooms. I happen to work for a privately held company. I'm very lucky. Hearst was smart in the way that they did their investments. And it's not that we haven't had to make cuts. We have. It is just that I work for a company that doesn't take on debt. And the result is that we don't have that heavy burden of having to finance the expansion of Hearst on the shoulders of the local consumers of news products. So we have that luxury. It is a sad thing to see what has happened to community newspapers like those. In the early 90s, I was the editor of The Record in Troy. And at that time, when I became the editor of The Record in 1991, the audited circulation was 41,000 daily. And as the cuts were being made, we used to, with black humor, refer to it as the drive for 25. We thought 25,000 was like the lowest base of circulation we could be. Today, the circulation of The Record is below 5,000. And that kind of cut has had a demonstrable effect in the community, I think. And it's a shame. And we try to pick it up as much as we can, but we can't do as much in Troy as the entire staff that I used to have in Troy could do. And so we know it's had an effect. You still have to do what you can with enterprise reporting, but you have to hope that your owners recognize that this is not like selling low-quality products at a high price. We do have a social responsibility here. Notwithstanding the fact that there's a profit motive on the part of our publisher, that is definitely the case. And my publisher, George Hearst, is quick to say, no margin, no mission. He cares about the profit margin. But you have to respect the responsibility that you have as well to your community.
Okay, so last question. I'm wondering if you can say something about the ideal of journalistic objectivity in today's polarized political and cultural climate. Do you think it's an ideal worth preserving? And if so, how might this be done, particularly in the face of the highly ideological news sources that people are increasingly turning to on cable and on the internet?
I think fairness is essential. I use that word rather than objectivity because true objectivity, you know, as humans is impossible. I do think that the highest calling for a journalist is truth-telling. To that end, we have painted on the walls of our main conference room in the newsroom the four major tenets of the Code of Ethics of the Society of Professional Journalists, and the first of those tenets is this: seek the truth and report it as fully as possible. Now, truth-telling does not mean just reporting back what somebody said to you. You know, if you report that Donald Trump said his inaugural crowd was the biggest in history, and if you don't point out that that is not true, you are not being true to the journalistic axiom of truth-telling. That's why we get in trouble with an administration that is not committed to truth-telling. So it is very difficult these days to confront the reality that many people in our audience prefer to believe misstatements because they square with their political ideologies than to believe our very best efforts to be truth tellers. And we are then identified as being partisans when all that we are trying to do is apply the same standards of truth telling to this political climate as we have always applied. That is misinterpreted often as being partisan or biased, but we can't do anything else. I can't shy away from that. We have to be rigid in our adherence to truth-telling, fair to the other side. But if we were to say that climate change is not happening and give that equal weight to the scientists who are pointing out to the reality of climate change, we would be shirking our responsibility. Balance is not the objective in journalism. Truth-telling is, and that's the difference between what I think our responsibility as journalists is and what some of our critics see that they want us to be doing.
Well, thanks very much for this interview, Rex. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
Thanks very much, Aaron. Glad to have the opportunity.
That was Aaron Pettinati talking to Times Union editor Rex Smith about the state of print media in the Capital Region.